Welcome to The Power of Stories, a podcast by women, about women, and for women. Their voices and their stories. I am Sharon Catherine D'Agostino, a passionate advocate for the empowerment of women and girls everywhere, and the founder of sayitforward.org.
And I'm Yodit Kifle-Smith, a creative dedicated to making sure the voices and stories of women are heard. I have the privilege of working with Sharon on sayitforward.org to do just that. In this podcast, you will meet courageous women from around the world whose unique path to empowerment will leave you encouraged and inspired.
We are very happy to welcome Dr. Angela Oliver Burgess, who's joining us from home in Florida in the USA. Dr. Oliver Burgess is a senior humanitarian and development expert with experience working in complex emergencies and post-conflict contexts. Angela is the founder and president of the nonprofit organization Smile for Budgie, which she started in honor of her late husband. Angela, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you, Sharon. It's a beautiful honor.
I believe that a great place to start is for you to explain to our listeners what a humanitarian and development expert is.
What a humanitarian aid worker focuses on is really assisting people in the sense of an immediate crisis, whether it's due to an armed conflict or a natural disaster. And this is bringing life-sustaining aid, whether it's medical, food, shelter, clean water. And we're really working with the local population and the local services there on the ground and assisting them in this state of a crisis. A development worker would take that a little bit farther onward into the future. So after that kind of crisis stage has been addressed, then you move in the long term. How do we rebuild our lives, our communities, our country? And that's where the development worker comes in and kind of works alongside and building up those local structures so they're able to sustain themselves and to be able to really address the needs of their communities moving forward.
What sparked your trajectory into becoming a humanitarian and a development expert?
When I started that was a time that, you know, the field, some might say from my experience, was more male dominated, and in particular in those leadership roles. And a lot of that is because it is, you're working in very dangerous settings. And as a woman, some of those settings can even be more dangerous. And so it did tend to be more of a male dominated field. And so I always kind of reflect too back on myself, where did that interest and passion and drive come from to really pursue that? And I talk about it with my family too. And really, I had that sense of there has to be something more out there than what I see before me. There has to be something greater. And my purpose is to find that and to search for that. I saw an advertisement of when the Peace Corps was, you know, being developed. And I just thought to myself, you know, that's where I need to be, you know, in service to others. And I was a very young child at the time. So I always kind of felt like it was my life calling. It was my true inner purpose to work in that field. And I'm not saying that in the sense that it's greater than anybody else's work. It was just more of where I felt my place should be. And then I just immediately went into that field after I completed my undergraduate degree. Mm-hmm.
Many of us, and certainly many of our listeners, have worked in jobs or in companies or in fields where the predominant voices were male. What did you do to have your voice heard?
I think what's important is to not take things so personally, which is not easy to do. So because if I chose to do that, then that would take me down a different path, and that would become more myself-driven, ego-driven. And where I kind of reflect on, where is the higher goal here? What are we all trying to work for? And then how could I be a part of helping to change that? I found that it shifted with my relations with others is go all in a very authentic, genuine, and sincere way, where I'm there is absolutely being present with everybody else and demonstrating and trying to practice myself showing respect for the other person. When I served in Afghanistan, it almost took a year until I really got to that level, sometimes of certain male leaders to look at me and value my input. Working in a crisis, all roles or all needs that are there, everybody must do. It's not like this is my job and I'm only going to stay in this lane. It's like this is what is needs to happen. And we're all on it together, working together, collaborating together. And through that collaboration and that genuine partnership, I think those were the transformation shifts can happen.
Overcoming fear is both a challenge and an opportunity for all humans. I can't even imagine what it is like to work in a conflict setting or in any place where a whole community or sometimes a whole region is in crisis. What advice do you have for overcoming fear in the moment?
Sometimes I feel that maybe I didn't feel things so deeply because I didn't allow myself to do it. If I took that pain on truly, I wouldn't be able to continue and endure the work I was doing. So there was a level where I had to kind of distance that internally in a very deep, sometimes spiritual level. And that could be very challenging. And I think that a lot of that I'm dealing with later in my life. The trauma that I witnessed and experienced, I probably didn't deal with so well in that time because I took it as a survival tactic.
You talked about trauma and delaying your focus on dealing with trauma in your own life. And this is a very common experience for women and men, that in the moment or even the year after a trauma or 10 years after a trauma, they may not have dealt with it. What would you say to someone who knows that she or he or they have not yet dealt with a trauma that needs healing?
You're not alone. No one should ever feel they're alone, even though they might be physically alone. And it's okay. Your journey is your journey. And the pace that you need to have things unfold to address your own trauma is your journey and your pace. And there's no step rule to get there. And it's very cyclical. I had a massive trauma in my life, losing the greatest love of my life in a very, very instant, unexpected manner. In that one split second, my entire life changed. I could have given up. There are many times that probably I wanted to, but there is a time that then you realize that, you know, we're greater than this. You know, there is a greater sense of purpose of our own life being here, and that we must find a way to move forward through that. And there is a light. It shines differently at many different moments of our life. And it's different, but it's beautiful.
There is a light for all of us. And then some people feel responsibility for shining that light to light the path of others. And one of the things that you did coming out of this loss of your love of your life is that you started a not-for-profit organization called Smile for Budgie. Will you tell our listeners about that organization and what you do?
Paul Budgie Burgess, Budgie was his nickname. And we met actually in Kabul, Afghanistan, where he was working for the United Nations. I was working with the U.S. government organization. And it was instant. I was 45 at the time. And I always knew that for me to really make that partnership, it would have to just be my absolute soulmate. But I knew that when that would come, it would be instantaneous. And it was. Unfortunately, it was cut very short. We only had 3 years together. But the 3 years were more than a lifetime. So we just have to be present in every moment in our lives and appreciate that, because that's what we have. Mm-hmm. You know, the past is the past. The future we don't have. We have this. We have the present life that is our gift that we have been given. So we just thought he had a beautiful smile. So that's how the name came. Smile for Budgie was his nickname. He walked the walk of anybody that I've ever met in my life. That just was, talk about a real humanitarian aid worker. He served in many countries around the world as well. And really giving selflessly of himself to others in the truest sense. And always with a smile on his face and with a warm heart. And he just believed that no child or person should live with violence at any level. That could be very simplified. And people are like, well, that is, you know, that's not achievable. And, you know, what we see going on in the world consistently is heartbreaking. We can work together to ensure that there is no reason why any child needs to live in this violence. And so with that, we needed to start a nonprofit movement that really looked at that. And so Smile for Budgie provides educational and psychosocial assistance, because we really feel like education is a key pillar to one's transformation, and that kind of psychosocial assistance as well. How do we wrap around that young person and let them know that we truly believe in you and you have the power to change your life. But you're not alone. We are here with you to do that. We do work internationally, but our primary focus currently is really working within our local community, because I think it's so important to have that international bridge and that connection and collaboration globally to always maintain that, but also to also look at where locally, where are we living and how can we be a true community partner. So we really have focused very much working with young people who are in the system of care, which is foster care, and how do we provide them with the skill set to really have their voices heard. And we really talk about voice and choice, because it's important to have a young person's voices heard with that lived experience, because only they know what they've gone through. Mm-hmm. I had a beautiful family. I was truly blessed to have my parents and my family. Other young people do not have that. So their voices need to be heard, because that's their lived experience. And we talk about choice because voice is critical. They are an active participant in the decisions that impact their lives. So no decision should be made for them without them. And it's not just having that voice, but having their active participation in that process. The other thing we think is really important is, you know, providing that platform for a young person to have their voice is critical. But at the same time, we cannot assume that everybody knows how to utilize that voice in an effective way or in a strategic way that doesn't cause them more harm. Strategic sharing is critical, because you can ask somebody to share their story, and if they're not really equipped with understanding what that means, that could cause them more harm later. And so we have found that really preparing, equipping, and supporting a young person through that process is critical. Sometimes all you need is just one caring, supportive adult in your life. And that could be anybody. Traditionally, you know, it could be our parents. But if somebody doesn't have that, it could be a grandparent. It could be another relative. It could be your next door neighbor. It could be your teacher. Everybody having that in their life, they can truly thrive, not survive, but truly thrive to be the person that they're meant to be.
So how does Smile for Budgie work?
We are a very small nonprofit organization, and our key is to collaborate with all of the agencies who are working in child welfare, because our particular population is with child welfare at the time in our local community, and they're the leaders. So how do we come in and support and collaborate with them and say, hey, we're here. Where are the gaps? When you go into a community, you don't go in and think, this is what I'm going to do. because this is our skill set. This is what we bring. It's coming in and conducting a real community needs, participatory needs assessment. And how can we help address some of those gaps with all you? Not coming in and doing something that somebody else is already doing. That is something that I have personally witnessed that really fails. When we embrace other people's power and recognize other people's power and not be threatened by it, this is good. We can influence here. And how can I come in and support that? And how can we work as partners?
How can we all encourage other women and girls to confidently use their own voice and claim their power?
First and foremost, we really have to ask them, what do they feel their power is? And where would they like to use their voice? And what would they like to say? Where are their needs? And then how would you like me to ally and assist you with that? So we don't assume. Us listening and learning genuinely without placing our own judgment. And I'm not saying that's easy, because especially as I get older, you know, we might think, oh, why are you doing it that way? But then it's like, wait a minute. I'm learning a lot through this process myself. Consistently, we need to do that for these young girls and women, and encouraging them that what they say matters. I think a lot of us deal with this. I know I do consistently is what I say doesn't really matter. But I think, encouraging young girls and young women that what you say matters, and to embrace your own authentic voice. You know, people will say, one day at a time. And I remember thinking to myself, after I lost Paul, was, I can't imagine even getting through one day. That's too much. That's overwhelming. It's just this moment right here before me is what I need to focus on. And that's truly what I learned. And I try to share that if we're just present, being present with each other in this moment, that can change us. To understand, to believe in ourselves, to value ourselves, to recognize our own inner power. And it's all different at all different levels. Anything you choose to do is meant for you to do it. And your power is yours, and it's great, and it's beautiful. And you value and worship that every day. And don't get caught up in what anybody else is doing at their level, because every level is important and it's all valued.
Thank you so very much for recording this episode of the Power of Stories podcast. At the very last minute, Yodit was unable to join us, but asked that we go ahead. She's fine. Her family's fine. Just one of those life events. I send out love and thanks to her and to Lisa DeJavine, who is the co-producer and editor of this podcast. I am really especially grateful to you, Angela, for the points that you made in reminding all of us about the power of our own voices and of the light that is available to us in this sometimes very challenging world. So thank you so very much for being here.
Oh, thank you, Sharon, and thank you for having me.
And to our listeners, we invite you to visit sayitforward.org, a place where you are welcome to share one or more stories about your unique path to empowerment. Or you can read the stories of other women and girls. This is Sharon Catherine D'Agostino
and Yodit Kifle-Smith, signing off for now and hoping you'll join us for our next episode of the Power of Stories podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, we do hope you'll give us a review and recommend the Power of Stories to a friend. And lastly, we want to remind you of the power of your stories.